moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
You are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 104.9, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Climb aboard a butterfly and take off on the breeze. Let your worries flutter by and do the things you please. In the land where dollar bills are falling off the trees, on a dreamer's holiday. Every day for breakfast, there's a dish of scrambled stars. And for luncheon, you'll be munching rainbow candy bars. You'll be living a la mode on Jupiter or Mars. On a dreamer's holiday, make it a long vacation. Time there is plenty of. You need no reservation. Just bring along the one you love. Help yourself to happiness and sprinkle it with mirth. Close your eyes and concentrate and dream for all you're worth. You will feel terrific when you get back down to earth from a dreamer's holiday. Make it a long vacation. Time there is plenty of. You need no reservation. Just bring along the one you love. Help yourself to happiness and sprinkle it with mirth. Close your eyes and concentrate and dream for all you're worth. You will feel terrific when you get back down to earth from a dreamer's holiday.
From a happy dreamer's holiday.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces, where weekly we present the best of the mysteries of the 1940s and 50s. Tonight will be no exception. We begin with a wonderful episode of Suspense, and then we conclude with a fantastic episode of The Whistler. If you have any questions or suggestions for me, please don't hesitate to write to Bruce at RadioMasterpieces.com. I'll be sure and get back to you. Thank you so much for tuning in, and now let's enjoy our great programs.
Tonight, we'll bring you Dame May Whitty as star of My Dear Niece, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed for by William Spear.
My dear niece, I'm writing you this letter in explanation of certain recent actions of mine, about which you're probably curious. As you know, since that day 4 years ago when your dear uncle died, may he rest in peace, I've been living a busy, if lonely, life. Fortunately, in a city as small as Hilton, one has many friends, but they in no way could make up for the loneliness I felt. As you recall, you were continually urging me to try to get some sort of a position. And so, finally, I took your advice and placed an advertisement in our local paper. It was 6 weeks ago this next Friday that I inserted the ad. I'm sure you must have chuckled when you read it.
Widowed woman, genteel, some secretarial experience, drives own car, desires position of interest with reliable business house, Address Miss Emily Rogers, Box 2B, or phone Hilton 22412.
I was somewhat surprised to receive a reply the next morning. I finished my breakfast. Yes, you're right. I still drink a cup of hot water for arising each morning. I'd finished at all events when the phone rang. Hello?
Mrs. Emily Rogers, please.
This is she speaking.
I'm calling about the ad you ran in the evening paper yesterday.
Oh, yes.
I think I can offer you a position you'd be interested in, Mrs. Rogers. My name is Bruce.
How do you do, Mr. Bruce?
We have a very small publishing house, Mrs. Rogers, and need someone to take care of any of the contacts we might wish to make in your part of the country.
Oh, aren't you from Hilton, then?
No. No, our offices are in Los Angeles. We'd pay you $50 a week, providing you could use your home as an office, although there wouldn't be much office work required. As I say, the position primarily would be one of establishing contacts.
Quite. It sounds fine, Mr.
Bruce.
It sounds fine, Mr. Bruce.
Good, good. Well, then, consider yourself under salary beginning immediately, Mrs. Rogers. I'll phone you again as soon as there's something more definite for you to do.
And that's how I got the job. I assumed, naturally, that I would immediately receive instructions from Mr. Bruce as to how I should go about establishing contacts. The first word I had after the telephone conversation was when the postman arrived the next Saturday with an envelope for me containing a check for $50. There was no return address on the envelope, and the check was a personal one bearing no company name. It was signed R.L. Bruce. Weeks went by in this fashion. Each Saturday I would receive the $50 check in the mail, but always the envelope was without a return address, and the check was a personal check. All the envelopes were postmarked Los Angeles, but other than that, I hadn't the smallest clue as to the identity of the company by which I was employed. I've always believed that money is very precious, and as your uncle, may his soul rest in peace, used to say, no self-respecting person would accept it without doing a lick of work for it. I was dissatisfied with the arrangement. I would tell this Mr. Bruce when he phoned that I wished to resign my position with his small publishing house. It was on the Wednesday, after the arrival of the third check, that I again received a telephone call from Mr. Bruce. He was charming, as he'd been on the first call. And before I had the chance to tell him of my wish to resign...
Well, I have your first assignment for you, Mrs. Rogers.
Oh, I wanted to talk to you about that, Mr. Bruce.
Oh, getting impatient, were you? Well, this will keep you busy for a while.
Really?
Yes, and Mr. Paul Stevens will arrive in Hilton this afternoon. Now, he's one of our most promising new authors, and I'm going to have to ask a big favor of you, Mrs. Rogers.
Why, what sort of a favor, Mr. Bruce?
Well, Mr. Stevens has been has some rewriting on a novel we plan publishing in a few months, and too many people interrupt him here in Los Angeles, so I wonder if you could put him up at your home until he finishes.
Why, well, I don't know.
Oh, he'll be no bother, Mrs. Rogers, and of course, all expenses will be covered. He has an awful lot of work to do.
Well, I suppose I could.
Oh, that's fine, that's fine. It's just a place for him to get away. Oh, and one more favor.
Yes?
Just so we're sure he's not bothered, please don't tell anyone he's staying with you.
And that's all I knew of the job, my dear niece. Well, at last I'd be doing something for my pay, which to me was very important. I waited around the house all day, afraid to leave, even to do my shopping, for fear I'd miss the telephone call from Mr. Stevens. It was quite late in the afternoon, almost 5 o'clock, when the telephone rang. Hello?
Mrs. Rogers?
This is Mrs. Rogers.
This is Paul Stevens, Mrs. Rogers.
Oh, yes, Mr. Stevens. I've been expecting your call. Where are you? I'll come and pick you up.
Oh, that's very kind of you. I'm at the corner... just a minute. The corner of Brookside and Sierra Madre.
The corner of Brookside and Sierra Madre. Fine. I'll be driving a black Buick convertible, and the right fender's dented. A parking station attendant did it.
Black Buick convertible. I'll be waiting. Bye.
Goodbye, Mr. Stevens. Oh, Mr. Stevens. Oh. I remembered I hadn't asked Mr. Stevens what he looked like, so that I would be able to recognize him. Oh, but then I thought that Brookside and Sierra Madre is not a busy intersection, and that the chances of there being more than one stranger at the corner were slight. I left the house immediately and drove through town to where Brookside crosses Sierra Madre. The first nervousness I felt was when, arriving at the corner, I found myself faced with this problem of identification. There were many cars, and a rather large and excited crowd gathered at the corner.
Now, stand back, everybody, please.
Oh, hello there, Mrs. Rogers.
Officer, what's happened?
A hit-and-run accident a few minutes ago.
Oh, how dreadful. Who was hit?
A man about 35. No one I know.
Was he badly hurt?
He's dead.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah. Oh, please, now, back.
Officer, I was supposed to meet someone, a gentleman here, a Mr. Paul Stevens. I don't suppose that this poor gentleman could be...
Well, now, the ambulance will be here in a few minutes, Mrs. Rogers. I'll call you when we find out who it is, if you like.
Would you? I'd be very grateful.
I'll call you later. All right, now, please, kids, stand by, will you?
Mrs. Rogers?
Yes?
I'm sorry to have kept you waiting. I'm Paul Stevens.
Mr. Stevens? Oh, I'm so relieved. Well, of course, please get in. The accident upset me. I was afraid for a minute it was you.
No, it wasn't me.
Won't you get in?
Thank you.
Have you had your dinner?
Yes, thank you. I'd like to go to your house, if you don't mind.
Well, of course, Mr. Stevens. It won't take long. I was really terribly relieved, and I thought what a worrier I was, because for a few minutes, I really had been sure that Paul Stevens was dead. But now everything was fine. I tried making conversation with Mr. Stevens on the drive home, but he seemed tired, not inclined to talk. And so we drove quietly back through town and to my house. We went inside, and I showed Mr. Stevens up to his room, and then went into the living room to tidy up. The telephone rang as I was setting out some ashtrays. Hello?
Hello, Mrs. Rogers. This is Officer Barnes.
Oh, yes, Officer. I'm glad you called. I wanted to tell you that I met
that Mr. identification for you.
Yes, that's what I wanted to tell you, Officer.
The name was Paul Stevens, all right. We had a handbill on him, is how we knew. He was wanted for a payroll robbery in L.A. And he wasn't hit by a car. He was thrown from a car. He was murdered. Hello?
I couldn't answer. I stood there, frozen, with the telephone receiver in my hand, looking at the door to the hallway, where the man who called himself Paul Stevens stood, smiling tightly, holding a gun in his hand. A gun that was pointed right at me. My mouth felt frozen. My throat dry. I stared fascinated down the barrel of the gun pointing at me.
Mrs. Rogers. You there, Mrs. Rogers? Hello? Hello?
Thank him and hang up.
Hello, Mrs. Rogers. Are you all right?
Yes. Yes. I'm all right, officer. I was...
Thank him and hang up.
I was... Thank you, officer. He walked away from me then and sat across the room where he could watch me and also see anyone who might come to the front door. The gun rested in his lap. I stood and stared at him. My mind raced. I tried to think of what to do. I was surprised when he spoke.
Sit down, if you like.
Who are you? Why did you tell me you were Mr. Stevens?
Sit down.
Who are you? How dare you pretend to be Mr. Stevens?
I'm stupid.
What?
I didn't think they'd find out who he was. I didn't know he was hot.
You killed?
Yes. I killed Paul Stevens.
That's all he would say. I tried to find out who he was and why he'd chosen me and why he killed Mr. Stevens and what he was going to do next, but he wouldn't answer me. He wouldn't say anything. He looked over at me occasionally and smiled. It was beginning to get dark, and I got up to turn on the lights.
What are you doing?
It's dark. I thought I...
I like it dark.
My house doesn't look well in the dark.
We'll be going out in a few minutes, Mrs. Rogers.
Where are we going?
Oh, we're going out for dinner, Mrs. Rogers. You're going to be my dinner guest. Why did the cop call you?
How did you know he called me?
The phone upstairs. I was expecting a call. Why did he call you?
I thought you were dead. I thought Mr. Stevens was dead. All right.
Get your face on, Mrs. Rogers. I have a very important engagement.
We left the house then, got in the car, and drove to a restaurant I'd never been in before. It's on the highway, out past the other side of town, and has quite a bad reputation. The man didn't know where it was, but he knew the name. All the while I was trying to remember who he was. I say remember because there was something familiar about him. But what that something was, my dear niece, I couldn't for the life of me think. An attendant took the car when we arrived at the roadhouse and we went inside. We just sat down at a table when a small and very thin, dark-complexioned man slid into the seat next to the man who wasn't Mr. Stevens.
What are you doing here?
I had to come. It didn't work. They found out who he was.
Why didn't you stay hidden?
She knows I'm not Stevens. The cop told him.
You could stay at her house anyway, couldn't you? You have to come out where people can pick you up.
Take it easy, Al.
Nuts easy. What's the matter with you? Mary figures out a foolproof way for you to get rid of a guy and hide out right under the cop's noses, and then you go and louse up the whole deal.
It's not loused up.
It will be if you don't get away quick.
Maybe. I don't think you've met Mrs. Rogers. Mrs. Rogers, this is Mr. Al Newholt, who owns this restaurant.
Yes.
Hiya. Look, you better get back to L.A.
What good would it do? Have you got any contacts in that part of the country?
Suddenly, I knew. I knew who the man was. Because as he talked to Al, I remembered that voice.
We need someone to take care of any contacts we might wish to make in your part of the country.
It was Mr. Bruce. The same Mr. Bruce who'd given me my job and sent me the checks and who called me that morning and told me to expect Mr. Stevens that afternoon and to put up Mr. Stevens at my home for a while.
How did they find out?
What?
You said they found out who he was. How?
It was hot. They had pictures and prints on him. I dumped them at the corner just before I met her.
You're Mr. Bruce.
He did that payroll job. What did you say?
He's Mr. Bruce.
Well, that's very good, Mrs. Rogers. How did you know?
I just remembered your voice.
It doesn't make any difference. You know too much about this anyway.
Doesn't make any difference?
You want me to take her with me, Al?
I don't want her around here. Somebody might have seen her car drive in. They'd look.
I think we'll go back to her house and start fresh. That way it'll be harder checking where she went.
Whatever you do, do it now. The crowd starts coming for dinner soon and someone will see you.
Yeah, okay. Shall we leave now, Mrs. Rogers?
Where are we going?
We're going to your house, Mrs. Rogers. After that, I'm not sure. But I think I'll have to kill you.
We left then. I can't describe my fright. But it all seemed so hopeless that I suppose I was more resigned than frightened. We drove back through town. Mr. Bruce sitting very quietly next to me in the front seat. My car's not new, as you know, and although I often have trouble with it, I never before had the horn stick. But that night, it stuck. Right on the corner of Brookside and Sierra Madre.
Stop blowing your horn.
I'm sorry, Mr. Bruce. I'm not blowing my horn. It's gotten stuck.
Stop the car. Stop the car. Now, stay where you are and don't try to drive away, see?
Yes, I see.
Okay. Let's get out of here.
You got the horn fixed, Mrs. Rogers?
Who's that?
Evening, Mrs. Rogers.
Tell him everything's all right.
Want me to fix that horn for you?
Mr. Mayor, no, thank you. It's all right.
Oh, it only take me a second to fix it so you can use it.
Never mind. Mr. Mayor's. This is Mr. Paul Stevens.
Oh, pleased to meet you.
How are you?
I see you pulled them wires to stop the horn. I usually take care of Mrs. Rogers' car myself. Makes me feel funny when something goes wrong with it.
Oh, of course.
I'll bring it in the morning, Mr. Mayors.
Oh, no sense you're bothering Mrs. Rogers. I'll go along with you now if you like and take you home. Not safe driving without a horn.
Oh, I think that's an excellent idea.
I believe you said you wanted to show me the town this evening, Mrs. Rogers. Wouldn't you need the car?
Well, I suppose...
I was looking forward to the drive. You don't mind?
Oh, no, of course. You'll pick the car up, though, in the morning, Mr. Mayors. I had promised Mr. Stevens I'd take him for a ride.
Sure, of course.
Thanks for your trouble, Mr. Mayor.
Oh, glad to help. It is such a little town, we all know each other and like each other and like to help each other. That's so, Mrs. Rogers?
Yes.
Well, good night, Mrs. Rogers. And I'm glad to have met you, Mr. Stevens.
The rest of the drive was uneventful. The street lights were on now, and flashes of light from them darted into the car and lighted up the sullen face of the man who sat tensely by my side. I tried to remember all the conversations I'd had with him, to find the reason for his choosing me out of all the people who must have placed advertisements that day as the person with whom he would hide out. For by now, my dear niece, I was convinced that Mr. Bruce had deliberately set out to murder Mr. Stevens for some reason and hide out in my house where the police would be most unlikely to look for him. But why my house? Why had he chosen me? When we got to my house, Mr. Bruce directed me to leave my car on the street, and we went up the dark pathway to the front door. Mr. Bruce a few steps behind me all the way. It's quite dark tonight, isn't it?
Yes.
Why are we going inside?
I have to make a phone call.
I see.
Open the door.
Douse that light.
Pardon me?
Turn off the light.
Oh, sorry.
Now, pull the blinds down on that window.
Yes.
All right. Now the light.
Yes.
Get the telephone. Ask long distance for Crestview 9177 in Los Angeles.
I'd like long distance, please. Crestview 9177 in Los Angeles.
Crestview 9177. One moment, please. Los Angeles. Hilton calling Crestview 9177. Crestview 9177. One moment, please. Hello?
All right, give it to me. Mary, look, meet me at Al's as soon as you can get here. Something's wrong. No, I'm all right. I'll tell you later. Get here fast. Now, you got any pets you want to feed before we leave?
Where are we going?
Oh, a little trip. You ready to go? Don't answer that.
It might be the operator calling back. She'll wonder.
Okay. Answer it. But I'm right here.
Hello?
Mrs. Rogers, this is Officer Barnes. Say, oh, yes, operator.
Oh, yes, operator.
Is he still there? Say yes or no, operator.
Yes, operator.
Well, stall him a while. We're coming after him.
Thank you, operator. Dear Mr. Mayers, he'd understood me, and he told the police, and they were going to save me. Well, you just can't imagine. I felt exactly like the heroine in a motion picture. I simply had to prevent Mr. Bruce from leaving the house. Just a few minutes, the officer said. Just time enough for them to get here.
All right. Let's get going.
I wish I knew where we were going. Do I have to take anything with me? Will we be gone long?
Yeah. A long time.
Oh, then I need several changes of clothes. Let me think. My brown suit. Or would the gray be better? It's older,
but... Come on. You won't need anything.
Oh!
Huh?
The heater.
What?
I left the heater on in the other room. I'd better turn it off. I wouldn't like anything to catch on fire when we are gone.
Fire? You mean those heaters could set the house on fire?
No, not really. I meant that... Well, I'd rather not pay a gas bill that's been run up against me because I neglected to turn the heater off.
All right, but make it fast. Well,
Ah, what's the trouble?
Oh, this thing always sticks. I never can fix it. I remember I did it last fall. I was just starting off to meet my niece, Mary. And...
Here, let me do it. There.
Thank you. Now I feel better about it. I'm sure there must be something I've forgotten. Now let me think.
Come on, come on. Now you ready?
Yes. I'm ready. It was quiet on my street, peaceful and dark. All the neighbors' lights were out, except for the Gaineses across the way. One light was on upstairs in the back of their house. It threw a diffused pattern diagonally across the pavement, and I thought for a minute that I saw a figure move suddenly towards us. Mr. Bruce motioned to me to go ahead, and I walked slowly down the path towards the car. I could feel Mr. Bruce a few steps behind me. Suddenly, it happened.
Hold him high, Bruce. What? Get down, Mrs. Rogers.
What?
Oh, there you are. Mrs. Rogers, are you all right?
Yes, I'm all right. Thank you. I'm all right. And there it is, Mary. The explanation I promised you. I felt it your aunt that I should tell you how you happened to be in the penitentiary. When Mr. Allen, the roadhouse, first mentioned your name, I was suspicious. But not until Mr. Bruce made the phone call to you did I begin to piece the story together. You had suggested the advertisement. Your husband answered it and employed me. If only you'd told me, my dear, that you'd gotten married when you were in Los Angeles. After all, I'm your only living relative, and I could have come to your wedding. Then this whole thing wouldn't have happened, would it, dear? Because I would have known Mr. Bruce all the time. Let me know after the trial what your new address is to be, and I'll continue writing. As always, Aunt Emily.
When somebody's eyes look into your own. Life begins when you get your gal all alone. From morning until twilight, I don't know I'm alive. But I know love begins at 8:45. The stars are gonna twinkle and shine. How they'll shine this evening, about a quarter to nine. My loving arms are gonna tenderly twine around you, around a quarter to nine. I know I won't be late. Called at 8:30. I'm gonna hurry there. I'll be waiting where the lane begins, waiting for you on needles and pins. And then the world is gonna be mine, mine all mine, this evening about a quarter to nine. Cause at 8:30, I'm gonna hurry there. I'll be waiting where the lane begins, waiting for you on needles and pins. And then the world is gonna be mine, mine, all mine, this evening, about a quarter to nine.
You're listening to the new Valley 104.9 FM.
Tonight, Final Return.
There's always a woman in the life of every successful man. A woman who inspires him or pushes him or nags him from obscurity to fame. Yes, a woman can be a man's destiny. If it hadn't been for Sylvia, Alex Kirby would have worked his life away at one of the open hearth furnaces of the Williston Steel Company. And the state would have lost one of its colorful political figures. But fate had something else in store for Alex Kirby. Something that had its beginning at a high school prom he attended one night with his friend, Leonard Evans.
Oh, look, Len, I'm getting out of here. I shouldn't have come.
Now, wait, Alex. I told Sylvia I wanted her to meet you.
Oh, some other time. I don't belong here.
What's that mean?
Look at all these kids having a swell time. And then look at me.
What's wrong? You an old man at 21?
Len, I never went to high school. That's the answer. I don't want to kid myself I belong here.
I suppose I do.
Sure you do. You went to high school, to college. You know this Taylor dame.
She's not a dame, Alex. She's a teacher.
That's what I mean. They're all dames to me. I don't belong here.
Well, it's too late to back out. Here's Sylvia now.
Hello, Leonard. Hope I didn't keep you waiting.
Oh, no. Sylvia, this is Alex Kirby. You've heard me talk about him.
Oh, yes.
Alex, Sylvia Taylor.
How do you do, Mr. Kirby?
Hello.
Have you gentlemen been dancing
yet?
Oh,
as a matter of fact, Sylvia, Alex was just saying...
Hey, now look, Len.
How about it? Why don't you two take this dance?
Well, if Mr. Kirby...
Of course he does. Go ahead. I'll go sample the punch bowl.
You dance very well, Mr. Kirby.
Huh. Oh, do I?
Poor Leonard's an atrocious dancer.
Oh, Len's a swell guy.
Yes, his whole family is sweet. They've been wonderful to me. I board with them, you know. I've no family of my own.
He told me.
You work in the open hearth, don't you, Mr. Kirby?
Yeah, where muscle counts. Len works in the chemical lab.
You haven't any family either, have you?
How'd you know?
Oh, Leonard talks about you. He thinks very highly of you.
Yeah?
Yes, he says you've earned your own living since you were 13. He thinks you have great potentiality.
Yeah?
And so do I.
Yeah?
For goodness sake, Mr. Kirby, the word is yes.
What?
Not yeah, yes.
Oh.
You're to make anything of yourself, you must learn to speak properly.
Oh. Well, I'll be darned. Hey, you like to know something?
Something.
Okay, something. You're the first girl who's ever corrected me. Kind of hopeless, though, don't you think?
Oh, I don't know. Mr. Kirby, I'm beginning to think you have possibilities. Alexander?
Yeah? Yes?
Have you told Leonard yet?
No, not yet.
Oh, you promised me you'd do it today.
Well, I couldn't.
Why not?
Well, Len's such a nice guy.
Men are not nice guys and good guys and swell guys, Alexander. How many times must I tell you that?
I know.
Surely you can tell Leonard about our engagement. Why not? Oh,
I know, but the way Len feels about you...
I've never given him the slightest encouragement.
Are you sure you want to marry me, Sylvia?
I knew it the moment I met you.
You sound pretty sure of yourself.
I'm sure of you, Alexander. Very sure of what the two of us can do together. We're going straight to the top.
Oh, there you go with that heading for the top stuff again. You've got me all wrong, Sylvia. I'm nobody at all.
You're handsome. That's a start.
I mean, I don't have any background, no schooling.
We'll make up for that together. You'll go to night school and I'll tutor you.
Gosh, I'd, I'd sooner have a good time than go to school.
Rather, dear. Not sooner. Oh. You'd rather have a good time.
Oh, okay, rather. But the point I'm trying to make
it
is...
It isn't a valid point, Alexander. Mine are. You're handsome, you're well-liked, you have native intelligence, and you have the qualities of leadership. Everyone who meets you knows it. And we're going to capitalize on those gifts.
Are you inferring again?
The word is imply, not infer. But I'm doing more than imply. I'm telling you flatly, we're going into politics.
But I don't know anything about politics.
You will. You're going right up to the top.
Where's that?
The governor's mansion.
You know, Sylvia, this is the first time I've ever heard you crack a joke.
Oh, I'm not joking.
Well, I'll be darned. Say, you mean it, don't you?
Of course I mean it. We're going to do things in this world, Alexander. Someday we'll leave this scrubby little steel town, but it can give us something now. Small and cheap and shoddy, but it's a start. Oh, don't you see, Alexander? You can have anything you want. If you want it badly enough. The only thing that can stop you is death.
Yes, Alex, Sylvia was very much your destiny from the first time she met you and corrected you. She was never a pretty girl, was she? In fact, when you married her, all the lively little girls you danced with and made love to wondered why you'd chosen a cold fish like Sylvia. They didn't know a man can't run away from his destiny, did they, Alex? At the time, nobody could guess that 6 years later you'd be the most important man in that grubby little steel town. Thanks to Sylvia. Yes, thanks to the books she made you study, the ambition she instilled in you, her untiring correction of your mistakes in grammar and speech and the social niceties. You were able to run for mayor and win the election. And on election night, after everyone had finally gone home, everyone but Leonard Evans.
Will somebody pinch me now? I still can't believe it.
I never had any doubts about the outcome, did you, Leonard?
No.
You can never be sure about an election, Sylvia. I'll admit I wasn't worried about the mill guys, the labor vote, but when the other side of town poured in for me, too, why, my gosh, it was a landslide.
Sylvia told you it would be, Alex.
Well, I know, but anything can happen in politics. Now, like I told that reporter...
As you told that reporter.
Oh, now, Sylvia, can't I relax when nobody's around?
School isn't out yet, I see. Well, I guess I'd better run along. I have some packing to do.
Packing? What do you mean, Len?
I'm leaving town tomorrow, Alex.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I'm not. Ask Sylvia.
Leonard told me 2 weeks ago, dear.
But you didn't tell me. You let me think.
I thought it could wait until the election was over. I didn't want to worry you.
Oh, I'm a child, is that it? So I'm a kid who has to be shielded from everything.
Now you're being absurd.
Okay, Sylvia, okay. Skip it. Well, where are you going, Len?
The West Coast. I'll be up to my neck in chemical engineering.
You sure you won't change your mind?
Oh, sorry, Alex, I can't. I've got to get away.
Well, I hope you'll make a hit at whatever it is.
Thanks, Alex. I know you'll be successful. You'll always be. As long as Sylvia's beside you.
As long as Sylvia's beside you. With her, you're a success. Without her, a failure. Leonard's right, isn't he, Alex? As the years go by, she's there beside you like your right arm, writing your speeches, standing quietly in the background as you move up the ladder higher and higher. It's inspiration at first, and slowly, subtly, it changes to desperation. She never lets up, eternally nagging, pleading, insulting, anything to keep you moving up higher and higher.
Sylvia! Sylvia!
Yes, dear, I hear you. In here.
Sylvia, it's all set.
What's all set?
The nomination. I had lunch with Ed Stevens today. He said it'll be automatic. I'm as good as on the ballot as the party's candidate for the 48th district. That's not bad, huh?
It's very good.
Well, aren't you going to congratulate me?
All right. Congratulations.
You're not very enthusiastic. Is it because you didn't have your hand in it for once? Because I somehow managed to swing it without you?
I don't want to disillusion you, Alex, but Mr. Stevens and I had it all settled last week.
What?
Yes. Furthermore, the one reason they selected you, according to Mr. Stevens, is the fact that you had nothing to do with the Preston machine, and I think you'll agree that was my decision. Am I right?
Yes, Sylvia. As usual.
Yes, Alex, higher and higher. And she's always there, making every decision, correcting your speech, jumping on you like a wildcat when you try to make a move on your own. And the trouble is, she's always right, isn't she? She has a genius for being right. You wonder if there's any escape, if she'll ever be satisfied. Washington, a seat in Congress. Still, she's there, picking away, goading you on. Then, at a smart embassy cocktail party, a girl walks into your life. A girl who represents everything Sylvia has denied you.
So you're Alexander Kirby. I've been wondering when I'd meet you.
Did you expect to, Miss Rowland?
Oh, yes. Dad talks so much about you, you see.
About me?
You don't know who I am, do you, Mr. Congressman?
Well,
I'm Senator Rowland's daughter.
Oh, I get it now. Of course, Senator Rowland.
You sound surprised.
Well, I never expected the senator... Well, frankly, I never imagined the senator having such a pretty daughter.
Of course. Dad has other accomplishments besides bellowing on the Senate floor.
If you're only one of them, he's a very remarkable man.
Very potent champagne, isn't it, Mr. Kirby?
I don't think it's the champagne.
Maybe the atmosphere?
Oh, maybe. You have the bluest eyes I've ever seen.
You're not going to take inventory of me, are you, Mr. Kirby? Oh,
I know I'm clumsy at this sort of thing. It's been a long time.
I don't think you could be clumsy at anything you do.
Ah, now you're laughing at me.
No, it's a defense mechanism. I always talk this way when I'm scared.
Scared?
Can't you tell? I'm scared to death.
Why?
For the same reason you are.
Vivian.
Silly, isn't it? We're both trembling.
Vivian, when can I meet?
Wait. Somebody's watching us.
Hmm? Oh, where?
Over there. The woman in that frightful dress. See her?
Yes. She's my wife. Listen, you've got to listen to me, Sylvia.
I don't think you know what you're saying.
I knew it'd be a shock to you, but there just isn't any other way. I've got to have a divorce.
Why?
Because I don't love you.
Oh.
Furthermore, I never did, and I don't think you've ever loved me. Is that good enough reason?
If it's true, it is. Of course, there are other considerations, too.
Yes, I know there are, Sylvia. They just don't seem so important to me now.
They're important to me. Who is she?
Vivian Rowe.
The one you were dancing with the other night?
That's right.
She's quite pretty.
What are you leading up to, Sylvia?
I'm just approving of your taste in women, dear. She's a lovely girl.
Glad we agree on that.
It's a shame you'll never be able to marry her.
Sylvia, I don't understand you. I swear I don't. I thought you had pride.
I have more pride than you will ever have, Alexander. And I don't think I flatter myself by claiming a little more intelligence. What do you think I am, Alexander? Why do you think I spent the best 15 years of my life making a somebody out of a nobody? Why, when I first knew you, you didn't know the difference between a champagne glass and a shaving mug. Why do you think I gave up everything I had?
Oh, wait a minute, Sylvia. I do know. I know exactly why you did it. You picked me out like you'd pick out a promising colt at a horse auction. That's all I was, a hunk of clay you thought you could make a career out of. And I've got to hand it to you. You did it. You rang the bell. You put your dough on a winner. That's me, a front runner, unbeatable at a mile and an eighth.
Alex.
Oh, it's true, isn't it? Oh, you're clever, Sylvia. You're smart. You're as cold and accurate as a piece of machine steel. But you made one bad mistake, my dear. You forgot I'm alive. I think, I feel, I got a heart. Oh, I beg your pardon. I have a heart. That's why Vivian Rowland is more important to me than anything else. And that's why I'm going to marry her.
You mean you're going to commit bigamy? I've already told you divorce is out of the question.
You've got to be reasonable, Sylvia.
I think I'm being fair. I've devoted my life to you. I think I'm entitled to something now that we've arrived. Might as well put divorce out of your mind, Alexander. I'd die before I'd give you up. Is that clear?
Yes, I suppose it is.
Alex.
Huh?
Have you told her yet?
No.
You said you'd do it last night.
I will, Vivian. Tonight, for sure.
You do love me, don't you?
If I could only tell you, Vivian.
Oh, I can't wait to let Daddy in on it.
He doesn't suspect anything, does he?
Oh, of course not, silly. Nobody knows about it.
What do you think he'll say?
Oh, he thinks you're smart and ambitious, and I think you're handsome. I think we'll agree on you.
Of course, he might think I'm a little old for you.
You're only 35.
Well, still, that's a little older than you are.
I want it that way. I'm really not a know-it-all, Alice. I'm a fake.
You a fake?
Yes. You'll have a lot to teach me, Alice.
Teach you?
Scare you?
No. Just happen to think I've never been asked to teach anybody before.
You will tell her tonight, won't you, sweetheart? I'm getting awfully tired of waiting.
All right, Vivian. I'll tell her tonight.
Well, Alex, what are you going to do? It looks as if the next move is up to you. You know it's useless to argue with Sylvia, don't you? She has you where she wants you. In the center of the ring, like a trained seal balancing a ball on your nose while she stands over you with a whip. There isn't room for anything else in your mind, is there, Alex? Not even the biggest election in your career.
Hello, Jerry. Jerry, this is Alex. Look, tell him I can't speak tonight. Oh, I'm sorry. Tell him I don't feel well. Tell him anything. I just can't make it, that's all. Oh, okay, so it loses me 1,000,000 votes. What if I don't care? All right, I'll lose the governorship, too. I'm not talking tonight, and that's final.
Alexander. Why aren't you down at the auditorium?
I'm not speaking tonight, Sylvia.
What's the matter?
It wasn't up to it.
You know what it means?
Yes, I know what it means.
How long are you going to keep up this silly brooding?
Sylvia, won't you listen to reason? You're not happy the way things are you?
I don't suppose I am.
Well, why won't you?
I'm sorry, Alexander. Believe me, I'm sorry. It's a horrible situation. There's no way out for you, and there's no way out for me. You see, I'm just as determined to go to the top with you as you are to get rid of me.
Listen, Sylvia.
Look at my side, Alexander. Does it seem fair to you to toss me aside after I've served your purpose? You're a sort of a work of art, dear. You're something I made with my two hands and my brain. You're like a picture I spent a lifetime painting. When you're gone, there's nothing left for me, don't you see? There'd be no reason for me to go on living.
All right, Sylvia.
The next week is like a long nightmare, isn't it, Alex? The clamor of the campaign rings in your ears. You find yourself making speeches, the speeches Sylvia wrote for you, by the way. Banners, posters, cheering crowds are all around you, but you hardly notice them. Slowly, insidiously, something is happening to you. Everything except you and Vivian and Sylvia fades into insignificance. There's no way out, she said. As long as she lives, you belong to her. It was a shock when you first found yourself thinking of it, wasn't it, Alex? As long as she lives, you belong to her. You were panicky. You hurriedly cast it out of your mind. But it came back again and again, each time appearing less terrifying and more logical. And then finally...
Sylvia.
Oh, you startled me. Didn't hear you come in.
Come on, get your coat. We're going out.
What for?
Never mind what for. We're going out. We're going to decide this divorce business once and for all.
Now, let's not go into that, Ellison.
Okay.
How many times must I tell you okay is vulgar?
You told me for the last time, Sylvia.
What do you mean?
You corrected me for the last time. I'm going to kill you, Sylvia.
Alexander, if this is a stupid attempt to frighten me...
Nothing stupid about this revolver.
Alexander, you're not yourself. You can't get away with it.
Don't worry. I'm not going to do it here. That's why we're going out.
Can't be serious.
I've never been more serious in my life.
For that Roland girl,
and for me, too. For my own salvation.
You're throwing it all away, aren't you? Everything we spent 15 years building.
Maybe, if I'm caught.
You will be. You're as stupid at this as you are at everything else. But you'll never get away with it, Alex.
All right, I won't get away with it. So what?
I said I'd rather die than give you up, didn't I?
Something like that.
Maybe it is worth dying for.
What do you mean?
You can't understand it, I guess. I don't suppose anyone could understand it. That's the trouble, you see. No one can know how I feel about you. It isn't love, exactly. It's a lifetime of work, worry, and sleepless nights. Years of mustering every ounce of strength I have to make you great. That's what you're throwing away, Alexander. And I won't let you do it. I won't. Listen, Alexander. If you're going to kill me, you can do it right, at least. You can let me help you here, too.
What are you talking about?
I'll write you a note, Alexander. I'll write you a suicide note. Oh, Alex, darling, I feel so sorry for you. It's been such a shocking blow.
Yes, I know, Vivian.
You have everyone's sympathy. No one ever dreamed she would kill herself.
The last thing in the world I expected.
I thought it was because of us.
Oh, no, Vivian, you mustn't think that. After all, there was her note.
Yes, that note. Oh, let's think of the future, darling. You've everything in the world coming your way. And now we'll both share it.
Always. We can't get married for some time yet, though.
Oh, I know that. But after the election...
Yes. I won't see you much until then. I'm going back into the campaign this week. But afterwards...
We'll always be together, dear. Forever and ever.
Well, Alex, it's really simple, isn't it? No one suspects you. Everyone's most sympathetic. And Vivian loves you. You go back into the campaign in earnest. No time now for anything but politics. Your own politics this time, your own ambition. You forget all about Sylvia and the ugly, sordid past. Until one night a few months after the murder.
What in the world can that be? Hello, Alex.
Well, Len.
Oh, for heaven's sake. I thought you were on the coast.
I was.
Well, sit down.
Thanks.
How'd you happen to come east?
Business. Been a lot of water under the bridge since I saw you last, Alec.
Yeah.
Tough about Sylvia.
I'd like to talk about it, Len.
Funny thing. You never knew how I felt about Sylvia, did you, Alec? I loved her, you know. Always had until I introduced you to. Then it was all over.
I'm sorry, Len.
Yeah, so am I. I've been reading the newspapers. They gave the story quite a spread.
Yeah, I know.
Natural, of course, with you a political bigwig and all.
Yeah. Well, what business brought you back here, Len?
Sylvia, what did you think?
What do you mean?
Very simple, Alex. I'm going to kill you.
Well, Alex, you try to talk, but all you can do is jabber. And it's no wonder, with your old friend Leonard Evans calmly sitting on the Davenport toying with a .38 automatic.
Oh, wait.
Yes, Alex. Wait. It's enough to make anyone jabber, isn't it?
No, don't be a fool, Len. Put that gun down.
I will later. May put it in your hand, in fact, just as you did with Sylvia. Why did you kill her, Alex?
Huh?
Why did you kill her?
She killed herself. It was suicide. Everybody said so. The coroner, the police surgeon, the papers.
You're not giving a statement to the papers now, Alex. You're talking to someone who knows you. Why did you kill her, Alex?
I can't mean what you're saying. It doesn't make sense.
You got tired of being pushed, didn't you? Thought you could get along without her. I don't know, Alex. Maybe I'm jealous. It couldn't have happened to me, you see, no matter how hard she pushed. We never could have reached the top of the ladder. And she wanted the top so badly. Well, that's beside the point, I guess. Why did you kill her, Alex? Why did you write that suicide note for her?
I didn't write it.
And you forced her to write it for you before you killed her. Oh,
listen, Len.
I got a copy of it right here. Took it out of the paper. Let's see. Here it is. I don't mean to infer you have been unkind to me. Does that sound like Sylvie, Alex?
What's wrong with her?
She never would have used infer, Alex. Imply is the right word, remember? She used to call you on it all the time. Let's get this over with.
Hello, Joe.
Oh, hello, Mr. Evans.
Scotch and soda double.
Right away, sir. That was tough about Governor Kirby killing himself. I just heard the news.
Yeah.
He's a friend of yours, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yes, it sure was tough, wasn't it?
Yeah. Here, Joe, buy yourself a drink.
Gosh, Mr. Evans. $20.
Yeah, I won't be needing it. Taking a little trip, Joe. Down to police headquarters.
Johnny Jones was just a country lad who tore each pair of trousers that he had. Every time he climbed the apple tree, 'twas then his britches parted company. Swinging down a country lane without a thought of romance, fishing pole upon his shoulder, the kid with the rip in his pants. They've been patched 100 times for one of his old maid aunts. Still they're torn each time they're worn by the kid with the rip in his pants. Cool in the summertime, cold in winter too. When the breezes hit the rip, they go on whistling through. Wouldn't you love the chance to swing along and sing a song with the kid with the rip in his pants? Carefree as a hummingbird and not much on the finance. Happy is the only word for the kid with the rip in his pants. He plays hooky twice a week, he's always taking a chance. All the fish play hide and seek with the kid with the rip in his pants. Straw hat upon his bean, a twinkle in his eye. When the devil's on the scene, the kid goes whistling by. Wouldn't you love the chance to swing along and sing a song with the kid with the rip in his pants? The kid with the rip in his pants.
I have flown. I have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
You are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 104.9, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.